What's up, everyone? This is Dariusz Kalbarczyk, co-founder of MG Poland, JS Poland, AngularMaster.dev, and WorkshopFest.dev. Welcome back to the Angular Master Podcast. Today, I have a very special episode for you. In just a moment, you will listen to a Q&A session with the core Angular team, which took place during the last MG Poland conference. So, welcome to the show, but before you dive in, make sure to subscribe to this podcast.
So thanks a lot for still being here and still being excited and full of energy, I hope, for the Q&A session now. So we have members of the Angular team here and also are remotely connected. Thanks for joining. And you provided quite a lot of questions, so let's immediately start with that and get into the details. In general, there were some questions. If it comes to all the whole new features, to maybe sum up not only one question but several. If it comes to the new features, what is it about update experience, support with schematics? How should people try to sell this internally in their enterprises? So the efforts that they need to take to upgrade to the recent APIs. What's your take on this, Alex, or also the others?
Yeah, so I think there are a few migrations in the V17, for example, V16 to V17 that we have for you. The kind of headlining features like the control flow and the defer block, for example, they don't have automatic migrations. It's hard to for us to know where to insert defer, for example. But the control flow does have a developer preview migration that you can optionally try. I think it's ng generate angular core : control flow. So feel free to give that one a try.
I will also add that maybe this is not necessarily specific to V17, but for those of you that haven't tried it already, Mingo has already, and actually Mark has already talked about this, there's a standalone migration, which is, again, it's not automatic in the sense that it won't prompt you to migrate to standalone when you migrate to the new version, but definitely try out the migration to standalone. It should take you probably 80% there, and give us feedback. Highly, highly recommend it.
Great, thanks a lot. If it comes to developing experience for the new control flow feature connected with the track by expression, have you considered default option was a question sometimes asked. Any generic pattern, any functions that could help us not to directly reference the properties?
Right. So I think we've got a GitHub issue opened exactly for this, and we kind of keep it open to have this discussion going on. So maybe just kind of explain once again why we decided to have track mandatory. The main motivation is that really we saw that with default track, the logic that we've got with NG4, which is comparing object identity, and people are using immutable data. Essentially, what is very often happening is that you recreate the whole collection in the DOM. So you're essentially dropping all the DOM, you're dropping all the components and directives that are there and recreating them from scratch. We also looked at the data inside Google of how many for loops are using track by, and it was below 10%. So those two things combined kind of tells us, and profiling applications in the wild tell us, that there is a really, really big architectural, a foot gun. You can actually degrade performance without realizing it. So this is explicitly a call out to think about object identities. And I think we will have discussion on how to make it more ergonomic, but currently this is a really, really good reminder that that's really important. And the only other thing I wanted to add that is, if in doubts, that I think the reasonable default is track by index. This kind of gives you reasonably correct and performant loop. So again, I don't want to say we will never do a default, but I think there is a very, the danger of making it kind of having some defaults compared to the potential performance gains by which you can get by actually thinking about object identities. We kind of land, like we're leaning towards, like, hey, you know, we know it's friction, but it's important friction.
Maybe just in a nutshell, because I'm not sure whether everyone in the room and also remotely connected knows what TrackPy actually does. A lot of people are asking me that. Basically, what does it do in a nutshell? Why is it necessary?
Right. So essentially, one of the main jobs that NG4 is doing is to look at your collection and try to figure out what should happen to the DOM. So initially, you get the collection. NG4 is like, oh, I have nothing to the DOM. I've got a collection, I'm going to render all the items. But when you change the collection, the NG4 is trying to say like, okay, I've got the previous state, I've got the new collection, I need to figure out the absolutely minimal set of changes that I need to do to the DOM to kind of display you the new collection. So it's trying, okay, which elements should I remove? Which elements should I add to the collection and so on? And as soon as we start to talk about the adding and removal, we need to have some way of comparing the objects. It's not always obvious, like what does it mean for two objects in the collections to be equal? Like if I've got two strings of like that have like, let's say like Pavel, like are those are those the same or like did you mean something else? I just don't know. So TrackBy is essentially a way of giving a quality comparison or giving IDs to elements in the array so we can kind of compare the identity.
Great. Thanks for answering this as well, the additional question. Another big thing, rumors say you want to make RxJS optional. What does this mean for existing Angular application libraries using the Angular router, HTTP client forms, all the framework APIs to sum it up that are currently integrated with RxJS as public API?
Maybe we can first go to Minko online so we can have a good...
Yep.
It still makes sense to continue using RxJS in places where you're using it. Doesn't mean that you have to make it optional in your project right now. Even if you're heavily using it and it works well for you, we primarily want to remove it from the critical learning journey. So if you are just getting started with Angular, it could be overwhelming to learn the like dozens or like hundreds of RxJS operators from the beginning as well. And also, it doesn't maybe make sense to be used in all the places that it's currently being used. I see how this very beautiful, expressive semantics of RxJS sometimes makes it really tempting to be overused in places. So we just want to be a little bit more intentional about it. This doesn't mean that we'll be breaking existing modules and breaking existing applications, though. We'd like to enable a path forward with... RxJS being optional.
Just maybe to add to this that like because there was a second part of the question about the specific APIs and I think we've mentioned today that some of the existing APIs kind of land themselves beautifully to signals. The form is the prime example here. Mm. Like the validity status, the current value of the form is just like it's almost the textbook definition of the signal. So probably those APIs will be extended to offer like another reactive primitive.
Yeah, and one of the things that came with v16 was the Angular Core RxJS interop package. And we see this as kind of the place where we're going to put code that bridges Angular concepts with RxJS. So, you know, the to signal and to observable are in there, the take until destroyed operator that hooks into life cycles are in there. I could imagine, for example, that there would be a bridge to HTTP client in there if HTTP client no longer used observables as kind of the default return value. And then existing applications would just migrate to kind of depend on the bridge instead of depending on RxJS behavior in core.
I guess we can sum up this with you have more choice on which direction to go because this is also a question. Would you say that the Angular framework is getting less opinionated in future?
I don't know if we have like specific intention of changing the level of opinionatedness. I think what we are doing is being very thoughtful about where Angular having an opinion about something brings real value to the community and where us having an opinion about something just maybe adds noise or makes Angular too prescriptive or restrictive to use.
Great.
Yeah, I can add one quick thing. I'll say with signals, maybe we're getting even a little bit more opinion about managing local component state.
another question, why should we use Angular in the first place? There are also some interesting questions, React, Angular comparisons, and so on. Why should we take Angular as a decision maker? Why is this a good idea?
Should we get a reason from everyone?
Yeah, perfect.
Me personally, because I love using and develop apps with it. Just
your favorite.
Simple like that. Yeah, my favorite.
Great.
Of course.
Popular opinion here. As it should be. Simona, what's your take on it? This.
I too love Angular. And that's one of the reasons why I would definitely continue using it. I would say that probably part of the reason why I think it's great to use Angular is because it's a battle-tested framework. It has been around for quite a while. We're continuing to innovate and iterate and work alongside the web platform and the standards that are as they evolve. And also there's like thousands of applications that run Angular at Google, for example, and a lot of the changes that we are making are tested first at Google, and then you get this really stable framework to use in your applications today as well.
Yeah,
I can add mine. So we had a conversation a year or so ago about what makes Angular Angular. We're just debating almost for fun on the team, like, what features or what aspects, if you removed it, would mean that the framework is kind of no longer Angular? That's a hard question. But my answer is actually ng update. I think the fact that you can install Angular at version 2, build an application, and ng update all the way up to v17 tomorrow, that is amazing. And you don't see that in any other framework. And I think that's a really compelling reason to choose Angular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me jump in on this. I would say for me, what makes Angular Angular and why should you use it? Separation of concerns. And what I mean by that is this. Angular, our team, we're focused on making Angular great, right? Like that's what we're focused on, like delivering value to the users. But because we're focused on that and the way we enable our community, enable you, is that the community has built fantastic solutions for things that we don't want to like spend our time on because that's not what we're great at. For example, we get asked about mobile development in Angular all the time. There are teams building fantastic mobile solutions that are production ready. But you know what makes the partnership great or the collaboration great? We're focused on Angular. They're focused on using Angular to build that part. And because we can focus on making Angular great, it just gives so much space for the community to focus on things that they're great at. So that separation of focus and concerns, I think, makes Angular just a fantastic solution.
You're listening, Angular Master Podcast. Listen, code, repeat. Everything you need to know to become an Angular super developer.
Maybe to continue the other opinions of the team, why Angular? Maybe a little bit shorter answer if possible.
So my take on it, and obviously I'm biased working on the internals, is like this is like internally really good tool, right? Like we've got some, like our way of updating DOM is really well optimized. But I think part of why this is like kind of solid behind the scenes is that we kind of have a hard and long look at things that just don't work and tackle them one by one. And that's kind of the habit here. There's like, we don't shy away of looking at what we did and say like, okay, we could then build better and come back and redo it and do it over and over again till the new use case arrives.
Great. Maybe Minko and Emma, finally, thanks.
Emma, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can go. Yeah, I think everyone has sort of talked about it, but stability and velocity. And I think those aren't separate things, right? Like, as Simona said, the stability that the framework brings, or like, as Alex talked about, ng update, right? Like, it's stable. You can like go from version to version and like not have major breaking things. And those migrations are painful, yes, but they're not the most painful they could possibly be, right? And you're getting all the migrations Google builds. And all of that stability is really cool, But I think the piece that Angular has really done recently is that velocity, where like these features are mind-breakingly like faster, the framework's faster, the framework's more performant, the developer experience is better. And I'm getting all of that in those stable upgrades, right? So like we built the docs originally in V16, we updated to V17 in like under a day. We ran a bunch of migration scripts and we got all of that velocity of like the new control flow benchmarks making builds way faster or ES build in the application. Like we got all of that in the stability of that upgrade. And then I don't have to think about performance at all because the framework does all that for me.
Great. Thanks a lot. Finally, Minko, thanks.
Yeah, pretty much the rest of the team covered what I had in mind as well. I would put it in a different light also. The engineering process that we have, like just compare, just look at the number of pull requests we have and the number of reviewers. We have over 25,000 pull requests, and every single pull request is reviewed by like enough people. And after we merge every single pull request, we also sync it in Google and we run hundreds of thousands of tests. I know a lot of people talk about stability, but like we know every single thing that breaks on Angular and we can guarantee smooth update journey, just exactly what Emma said around stability. And another thing that people have been consistently commenting about, also the engineering process, but I already talked about this as part of my part of the keynote. Something that we have been keeping like recognizing as the community has been pointing out as an advantage is just still being consistent, just having consistency across projects. So you don't have to learn Angular in a particular company and go to another company and learn everything from scratch. Angular is consistent across projects, so you have good portability of your skills.
Great. Thanks a lot for all those insights and your opinions on Angular and why to choose. Something more technical now again. If it comes to all the server-side rendering, hydration, resumability topics in the general JavaScript ecosystem, what's your take on this? What will be the future for the front-end landscape if it comes to server-side rendering? Are we moving away from the client or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's too early to see, really, for a lot of the kind of current investigations and ideas that are floating around. We were talking, you know, we talked in our presentation about the signal standardization effort. One of the topics there is async signals, which is really at the forefront, leading edge of what is being done. And that could have a huge impact on how server-side rendering is done. So it's a really exciting time. I don't know if I even want to like throw out a prediction just because it's most likely wrong. There's too much interesting stuff happening.
Great. Thanks a lot for answering this as well. There is also a very technical question. If it comes to the renderer fetching components, is there a way to access the instance of that fetched component?
Yeah, so there is in Angular an API in dev mode to do this, to go from the HTML like DOM element for a component to the component class instance. That is typically not something we've exposed or think you should really build applications on. We see the component tree in the DOM tree is fairly separate. And we would discourage APIs that kind of require navigating between the two. Not least of which because actually like accessing things from the DOM is relatively slow compared to accessing them from JavaScript.
General question, if it comes to signal components or the future APIs that were partly referenced in the RFCs, when can we expect?
Yeah, so I think like, obviously I can't project an actual date, not knowing some of the uncertainties between now and then, but we do plan to deliver kind of the pieces of the RFC, like signal inputs and query inputs and signal components in minor versions, like not to tie them to kind of one big all-inclusive release. So you can expect them to land kind of as Angular evolves in the normal feature progression.
So make sure to follow Inia and he will definitely report.
Yeah, maybe we have some surprises for a near integration in future, some NG update in here. Okay, fine. Great. Yeah, we're all happy that Enea gives us all those news summed up, right? Less effort for PR. Okay. Same thing, same question, or similar. The timeline for phasing out Zone.js, there were also questions related to NG modules and so on.
So as far as Zone.js goes, kind of the same answer. There's a number of features under that kind of umbrella of being able to write zoneless applications. We expect to kind of land them as we complete the designs and you know, test them and kind of separate them into individual features that will land in the minor versions. As far as NG modules, I think for now, like, we're happy with the state that NG modules are in. You can use them. We've kind of successfully with angular.dev now removed them from the initial learning experience. When you go through the tutorial on angular.dev, you don't start writing NG modules first. You learn standalone. I think there is a question of, you know, should they live forever, or should at some point, will they kind of outlive their usefulness? I think it's you, the community, that will actually answer that question. When we start getting GitHub issues of like, why are NG modules still a thing, right? Why is this still a part of the framework? Then we'll know it's time to consider, like, maybe they should be put to the side.
Great. Thanks a lot. Another question with a lot of upvotes. Is Angular turning into React, maybe as an umbrella term? I guess it's not only React. There are some things we learned from different frameworks, Solid and maybe Quick and maybe Svelte and so on. So what's your take on this?
So I don't know if those questions were meant in a positive sense or negative sense. That would be interesting to know. But I think there are two like things going on. Like comparison to React are kind of amusing to me because internally we are very, very, very different framework. Both in terms of mechanism and the templating language. And there are certain similarities when it comes to change detection process, but essentially both the current state and the evolution paths on which we are, I would say that there are like really two families of solutions. So we are not turning into React. We are not trying to. But I would love to continue this conversation over a drink, right?
Like, maybe on social media or whatever. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add is we are inspired by a lot of the kind of things that other frameworks are doing. Our initial control flow proposal, for example, was, you know, using a syntax very similar to Svelte's because we felt it was kind of clean and very readable. And, you know, the Angular community changed our minds and, you know, we adopted a different option. We also like some things about the React experience. We like how easy it is to refactor components in React. We like the you don't kind of directly reference things and don't have to double import them. So we're absolutely taking inspiration, but inspiration is not like copying. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Guess it's a good thing. Yeah. Learning from others, also the other way around. Good thing for the whole ecosystem. A technical question related to an API that was provided in addition, dependency injection, not only possible with the constructor, but also possible with the inject method, with some advantages, with some maybe obstacle hurdles if it comes to injection context. What's your take on this?
So there has been some discussion of what is the future kind of the dependency injection API in Angular. Largely driven by the fact that standard decorators landed in the ECMAScript language without the necessary constructor injection parameters that Angular depends on. So without the ability to decorate parameters in a constructor. And so we have been searching, like, do we need to make any changes to the way DI works in order to be compatible and not block people from using standard decorators? There is now a proposal in stage one for decorating parameters. So we're watching this with interest, and that might kind of affect the decision between do we kind of keep going with what we have or change the way that we recommend DI works. So I think the answer is keep doing the way you're doing it, and we'll wait and see.
Would you say, that was an additional question, would you say that it will become easier to use inject in methods during runtime, you know, where we typically normally receive that error with the injection context?
Yeah, well, we add injection context to more methods, quite possibly.
Yeah.
I think that we've looked at doing that for ng on init, for example.
Yeah, I see. Great. Something related to testing. Are there any plans to get rid of Karma? And maybe as an additional question, there were efforts to integrate Jest. What's about that?
For those of you that are interested in, particularly in this question, definitely have a look on our blog post. Doug Parker has actually written a blog post about that. And Mark could provide more context, but I'll just briefly say that we are adding experimental support, or we're working on experimental support for Web Test Runner with the goal of moving automatically all of the applications from using Karma to using Web Test Runner, and ultimately getting to a place where we're deprecating Karma.
And maybe the additional question related to Jest.
Jest, that's something that it is in the works, and we're hoping to make progress over the next few months as well.
Great. Also, quite upvoted question, maybe a funny one, but to clarify this as well, why is the logo not symmetrically? I guess this could be mixed up with the NG Poland new Angular logo.
I guess as the person coming from Poland, I can answer this one. It actually tries to mimic and kind of does it well, mimics the shape of Poland. If you look at the map,
mm-hmm.
It's...
And I love this because it shows that our, you know, communities can take our logo and make it their own.
Emma, could you also make sure and underline that the Angular logo will stay symmetrical?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Our logo is symmetrical. I think what you're referring to is the NG Poland logo. So we are so lucky we have hundreds and thousands of communities who were able to rebrand with us and got a sneak peek of the rebrand ahead of time. And so NG Poland's one of those, and they rebranded, and I'm so excited. I love the photo of the logo on the wall next to all the speakers. But that's the NG Poland logo, not ours.
Great. Thanks a lot. Next question, moving away from the new logo that was introduced yesterday. When will we move to standalone being assumed to be truly the default option for components? And maybe to extend this question, are there any plans for the signal component and combinations of signal and standalone and so on?
So let's take those questions one by one. Mm-hmm. So there was a question about like when NG modules will disappear, right? Like potentially get deprecated and so on. And I think actually the first step is to make standalone default, right? Like nothing will happen to NG modules before like we actually flip the flag for default for standalone. And when do we do it? It's honestly, it absolutely depends on you, right? Like I think when we introduced standalone, there was a lot of discussion. Is it is it better? Is it worse? Is it worth it? Is it not? I think now kind of the mood swing and we are starting to see those questions. Hey, maybe it should be the default. But ultimately, it will come from the usage numbers and feedback, right? Like, just tell us when we should flip the flag and we'll do it.
Raise your hand. Are you ready for it? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the data point.
More than 50%.
That's the data
point.
Not
all.
And the second part of the question?
The second part of the question was, what is it about the new signal components, likely also a decorator thing, and how is this related to standalone or NG module?
Right. So maybe you can talk about your idea.
Yeah. So this comes up a good bit in discussions internally, too, of like, hey, we seem to be accumulating some number of flags in the component decorator. Can we have a different way of just opting in across an application or a library or something to like, just give me modern Angular, whatever that might entail. And we have to balance that with, of course, like both being able to migrate people who are, you know, still not using the new features, but also doing that kind of invalidates all of the content that's been published, like blogs and videos that show the old component syntax that might not be, you know, opted into this behavior. So we're trying to balance that. We're working through a few ideas on how that could work. But ultimately, we want to have an experience that would include, like, also include this, the signals flag that you could, like, flip the default at a bigger level than just components.
Great. next question, I'm looking at you, Mathieu, Shaw, or however I should call you. People were asking, what's the best way to get into maybe first as a contributor, then maybe later on even as an Angular core team member? How can
you
start?
It's easy. Do what you do normally, open a PR, and that's how it starts. More practically, I'd say going into the Angular framework repo can be a bit difficult. It's a huge code base, but it has an amazing unit test base. So if you want to fix something, you can already rely on the huge code base for the unit test. But if you want to start with a simple PR, the team is doing a great work by marking certain issues with a label that is a good first issue that you can try. It's mostly, I'd say, documentation updates, and the team appreciates when people help them improve the docs by fixing a typo, fixing a link, improving, an example, adding a narrow doc, etc., etc. So if you want to start with something, I'd say start with, for example, a documentation page. Or if you see a small refactor, a small bug, you can try opening a PR. But keep in mind that if you bring something that will break others apps, they won't like it. And when I say they, I mean it's the people at Google, but it's also you guys and girls who develop apps. You do not like when something breaks. So try opening a PR. I'm personally helping people. If you want to reach out to us, for example, on Twitter, I can help you land your first PR and participate on the project. That's how I started.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks for your work. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, like, so we're actually having this conversation today in a hallway that I kind of see myself from 10 years ago, where I think actually my first PR was, it's kind of shameful, but it was removing one dot or adding it. I don't remember. In any case, it was one character PR. I still do small PRs. I prefer small PRs, but I think, like everything you said, the only other thing I would add is just like do things that are interesting for you. And I think like there is this rush of energy when you work on something that makes sense to you, that like matters to you. So yeah, just like have fun, right? Like, because it's a long-term commitment, and especially at the beginning when the code base is very new, the tooling is very new, everything kind of is unfamiliar. So having this kind of internal drive helps a lot.
Yeah, I can confirm having fun is the biggest drive.
Great. And thanks for that. The architecture, an architectural question, what's your take on microfrontends? What's the future of microfrontends in the Angular framework? Are there any other concepts to reduce the overall build time, maybe beside microfrontends? How can the framework support enterprises in that area?
So I'll add the first bit, and then I was hoping that Minko would be here to talk a bit more about micro frontends, but I've seen Pavel move the microphone to Alex, and Alex. So I think that already tells you the state of things, but basically, particularly thinking through the build question, one of the things that we've worked really hard on was add support for ES build. And I think you all have seen some of the results that we've published. So for very simple projects, we see up to 60% improvement in like build times. We've seen folks like, I think Jay Cooper Bell porting his Trellis project to use the new ES build pipeline, and has seen like 240% improvement in his build time. And actually, Matthew as well has ported some of the customer applications, and there are significant build improvement times. So already the things that we're trying to do are with the tools that you're already using, making sure that things are faster and smaller. So that's the first step. We are definitely continuing to investigate the space around micro frontends and trying to fully understand the use cases and the areas that you all are running into. And we're going to continue keeping you updated here.
Okay, thanks a lot. A question about Angular Material. There were also some questions around that. This specific one is about what's the future of Angular Material, the integration with the CDK existing ecosystem, like virtual scrolling that could maybe be extended to other components. But there were also other questions. What about all the new APIs in the Angular Material? So control flow and signals and so on.
So we don't have anyone from the directly from the Material team here, but we're continuing to work on adding support for Material 3. We're very, very close. If you haven't already watched the live stream, please check out the live stream from yesterday. There was one of our colleagues, Miles, he covered a bit what are some of the things that the Material team is focusing on. I would say Material 3, we are definitely continuing to invest in the CDK. We see a bright future for headless components, and there was something else that you had.
There was a second part of the question about what happens to the internal code base of
the new APIs.
Right. So, like, again, the good part is ng update. I'm sorry. Like, this is true story, right? Like, even if the schematic for the new control flow is kind of, you know, we're still testing it and so on. Actually, as part of the testing, Christian from the components team and framework team, he's doing everything everywhere and doing an amazing job. But that's a different story. Anyway, he ran the migration, in progress migration of the component repository. And I think kind of successfully migrated. And even he did some benchmarking just to see how those numbers from benchmarks translate to real components and seeing some great improvements for control flow heavy components. So that's actually easy bit.
Yeah, I think it was 30% in the control flow heavy. Yeah. Yes. And there's part of the question about like standalone for Material. That is coming. That is something they're planning to work on this year. I think they're also waiting for kind of some of the more advanced signals features to land, like inputs and signal components, and they plan to look at that too.
Okay, great. Another question about testing. Some people have pain with huge applications, huge unit tests. Maybe we can extend this even to end-to-end tests. What's the way what you would recommend to get proper testing time for huge code bases? Conventional ways take too long.
Right. So I think if anything becomes big, it becomes kind of harder to manage. So obviously, one of the techniques is making sure that your components are not too big and tests are smaller and so on and so forth. And I know it's easy to say, but that's actually the only thing that works in practice. I think when we today during the keynote, we were talking about the updated test bed APIs, that's hopefully will address some of those pain. And I think definitely we should, if there are like specific issues, just please go to GitHub and kind of, you know, report on the specifics, because we will be looking at the existing GitHub issues when thinking of the new APIs. Finally, there are interesting debates in the team on, you know, how we test UI code. And I think generally speaking, there are big parts of the logic that can be tested without instantiating components, just like pure functions or services, or, you know, like the logic that you've got in your state management system. So that's probably also something to be encouraged, that like you can test smaller chunks of logic without instantiating kind of components. And that's obviously easier to manage and faster to run.
Great, thanks. Maybe a question to the organizers. If my time is correct, we have 10 minutes left. If you could confirm this, otherwise, please pull us from the stage if it takes too long. Another question about the control flow syntax, the current one, not the new one, the current one we are using. Will this be removed? So similar like standalone ng modules and so on.
Right. So there are two bits that we kind of need to talk about. One is the entire machinery for structural directives. So ng template and the query that allows you to get the you know, reference to a template ref API, view container ref API, all those things, the star syntax and so on. None of this is going anywhere. this is like fundamental to the framework. Those are very low level important building blocks. So if you've got existing structural directives or want to create a new structural directive, please do so. Like none of it is going away. Now, there's a question about ngif, ng4, and ngswitch. I think we during the live stream yesterday, we shared the numbers, like the built-in control flow is not only faster, but it's also smaller, like better memory consumption. We believe the new API is more ergonomic. So depending on the adoption, we might ask a question like, hey, should we keep ngif around when majority is using, you know, at if? Again, this will come from the usage numbers and your feedback. Like there are no immediate plan to deprecate anything or even like, you know, starting this conversation. So, I mean, you are really in charge here.
Great, great. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for this Q&A session. Emma, thanks for connecting online, and also to the panelists here on site on stage. Thanks for all the interesting answers you gave, and I hope this was helpful for all of you, for the ngif Poland audience here and online connected. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Make some noise.